Caution before listening to this episode. There are some very heavy conversations concerning death, blood, and suicide and could seriously be not something you want to listen to now or ever. And I'm not joking. Because I'm a computer-generated female voice, this sounds like a joke. But I'm not. I'm not joking.
I like demanded, pleaded, called God on promises and was like, you have to show up or like I am done. And he did.
That's something to really think about. What does it mean that the God of the universe loves me?
Are we saying our God is bigger than their God or what?
Man, you got my mind going crazy right now.
I just think that that is evangelical bullshit.
And I don't fit in their box anymore. So feeling rejected from the church makes me feel far away from God.
If I'm living out the love of God, love of the divine, then in some ways we're unoffendable.
It's wrong to marginalize anybody for any reason.
Sometimes we can just have some things about our perspective that's off until we encounter someone who can challenge our thoughts, have conversations with us, and we just continue to grow and evolve.
I got him with you there. Yeah, I like that.
That sounded like womp, 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 womp to Rob.
I'm a hardcore gospel lover. I do love the gospel. I just think we get it wrong.
Girl, I was so highly medicated, I don't even know if you
Oh, I found my people.
I can be an asshole if you want me to be an asshole.
Who ever wants somebody else to be an asshole?
Well, sometimes it's entertaining for other people to watch someone self-destruct in front of their friends. So if I need to be that guy, I'll self-destruct today.
Wait, that is an interesting concept, though, because I could see myself wanting someone to be an asshole to somebody else mm-hmm. who deserves them being an asshole.
Oh, for sure. But I think that's...
And I don't think that would, I would say 9 times out of 10, that desire would not be admirable.
Right.
But I could for sure. And honestly, Priscilla, you're Enneagram and all that stuff. Priscilla has some real good 8 and I do too, but I think hers is way more accessible. And I mean, there are times when I'm seriously like, I'll be talking to the person on the phone trying to figure out, hey, you overcharged, blah, 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 blah. And in my mind, I'm thinking, you don't want to talk to my wife. You know, you better settle this with me because you don't want to talk to her. You
know, oh,
she's
dude.
Just way better at that kind of stuff.
I can get big with folks. I usually preface it with like, listen, I know this is not your fault. You are just a cog in the system. Don't right. take this personally. But I'm going to blow some steam and you're going to listen.
Yep.
And then I'll just kind of let off. It's funny with my family because Erica, she's an Enneagram 9, and it makes her very uncomfortable when I go to those places, mm-hmm. and it makes my son uncomfortable. But we didn't really know that about my kids. Like, so this was about 2 years ago. We were driving through a Wendy's drive-through,
yeah,
and I ordered something, and the lady she just kind of repeated it back. She's like super disrespectful, and then I said yeah, and mayo on the side. And she said, I heard you the first time, sir. That's exactly what you said to me. And I said, don't you dare speak to me that way. I mean, this is in a drive-thru. I said, don't you dare speak to me that way. I said, I'm the one with the money. You're the one that takes it and makes the food. I said, I do not appreciate your tone.
Yeah.
And she said, I don't appreciate your tone. And then all of a sudden, I guess a manager heard it. And a manager jumps in and is like, sir, I'll take over from here, blah, 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 blah. Of course, I look over at Erica's just like, oh my gosh, you know, they're going to spit in our food or whatever. And then we get through it and I look at the kids and I'm like, who was uncomfortable in that situation? And my son raised his hand immediately. And my daughter was like, no, she goes, you said exactly what she needed to hear, daddy.
Yeah, yeah. It's crazy because I am uncomfortable with that stuff until something happens and my 8 is accessed and then I don't care. I will say whatever needs to be said, do whatever needs to be done.
Oh, yeah.
And typically it just comes out naturally. And it's been that way since high school. I remember being at the fair, you know, being at the fair by yourself without your parents. And I was a junior in high school and I had like 2 freshman friends of mine. And this guy is trying to get us to play a game. I'm like, nah, man, we're not interested. We're just not interested. Yeah. And he finally says, just play it, man, just for free, just to see how you like it.
Yeah.
And my friend takes him up on it. And then he tries to maneuver it in a way to where he now says my friend owes him money. And I just went medieval on him.
Lost it.
I mean, I lost it. I was just like, what? what kind of person are you to try to pick on kids like us to get money? I mean, I couldn't believe it. I was like, that just came out of me.
Yeah, my it was mom, like, a, yeah.
Yeah, my mom remembers when I was really young, so probably like 10 or 11 years old, I would notice a guy looking at my mom in a sexual way.
Yeah.
And she said there's one time where I turned right around and started going back into the store because he was coming in. And she was just like, Joey, what are you doing? It's just so
well, it's funny to hear you say this about your Enneagram 9 because Erica's the same way. It should be really uncomfortable. But there's a breaking point. And when she hits it, she'll get very matter of fact and she'll stand up and, you know, kind of let folks have it. So,
yeah,
I get it. I totally get it. But yeah, I think there's something about, you know, as far as that like self-destruct thing, I think it's why people love reality television. You know, they like seeing someone act like a dick. And I don't know if it's because it's channeling something inside them that they wish they could be or they.
Yeah.
I don't know. Or people just like train wrecks.
Dude, I started watching a documentary on the dominant Florida Gators of the. I guess late, I don't even know how to say years anymore. Like what would I say as in the late 2000s,
era.
I guess.
Maybe an era.
Yeah, no, but like what do you call 2008, 2009? Is that the late thousands?
That's a great
question. And do we call 2011 the early teens? Like it was so easy when we were growing up because it was just like
90s,
oh, you know,
80s,
the late 80s.
70s.
Right. Mid-90s.
Yes.
Now it's like the mid-single digits.
Yeah. Singles? Let's just call it the singles, the 2000 singles.
I mean, what's crazy is I don't think has culture come up with like a standard thing that we call that. I don't know.
I've heard teens. I've heard that said.
Teens.
Yeah.
Late teens, early teens.
And we're so early
because now 20s. It's easy. It's like late 20s. But dude, how crazy is it that late 20s or early 20s no longer means the roaring 20s?
No, we are in it, man. Shit. Like we're in it now. Like we are in the 20s.
Oh, my
flapper
gosh,
dresses crazy. And all that stuff.
Oh, it's crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy to think about.
It's crazy. There will be times when the light bulb will go off and I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm old. Like, I can't believe this because, and I like how I'm wired up in this way. It never brings me down. Like, I'm the kind of guy that would trade in my physical condition deteriorating. I will trade that in any day for life experience and wisdom as far as mental health and stability balance and seeing what really matters in this world and all of that stuff. So I just see, hey, the older I get, the happier I'm going to be.
For sure.
Obviously within reason, you know, outside of a catastrophic, you know, event happening. But it's funny because here I am 46 years old. And I remember I had a fifth grade teacher who was 25. And I remember specifically that was her age because we celebrated her birthday and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. I didn't see her as a young teacher.
No, she was.
I just saw her as an adult.
A woman.
That's just a grown up.
Yeah, exactly. So, I see a 25-year-old now and they're like a kid to me.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, gosh, they seem so young. It's strange too, because in my job, I work with so many people that are older than me and younger than me. And I hear these younger guys, like a couple of younger guys right now, they're really into like 90s alternative grunge.
Yeah.
And they'll be talking about it. And they were all born after these songs. And I'll say, man, I remember when this hit the radio. Like I remember listening to this in my truck driving to school. It was fresh, you know? Mm-hmm. Remember when when Soundgarden dropped Black Hole Sun. I was like, I never heard anything like it in my life. It was so cool.
Yeah. Yep.
And they're like, yeah, I just found it like 6 months ago. I just found it. I'm like, oh my gosh, I feel so old.
Well, what's so funny nowadays, I'm sure you've experienced it with, well, maybe not. I think you have way more constraints on social media and that sort of thing. But the TikTok generation, they will resurface songs from like 15 years ago and make them pop culture success again. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, hear how ridiculous this is. I was saying the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air rap, and my son said, you know that song?
Yeah, dude, I've had the exact same experience.
What in the world are you talking about? It's a TV show that I used to watch.
Exactly. So I was quoted something from Wayne's World.
Yeah.
This was like a year ago. And my son's like, oh, did you see that on TikTok? I'm like, no. I didn't say, what are you talking about? And he goes, that's like real famous on TikTok. I'm not a TikTok guy. And I said, do you know where that came from? And he said, is it not from TikTok? I said, no, son. I said, this was a classic SNL comedy from the early 90s.
Yeah, it's like they think TikTok is this central
think tank of creativity. Hub
of creating entertainment and videos and music and all that stuff.
It's TV land. It's just regurgitating.
Yeah, here's my favorite. I was in Boca visiting my brother, and he has a student who opened an ice cream shop. It's doing really well. And so obviously the typical employee at these sort of establishments are going to be high schoolers. And so they had this, you know, they have all the ice cream flavors, like a really unique name. And one of the ice creams had something to do with D's nuts, chocolate, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And I was like, D's nuts. I was like, that's hilarious. I was like, oh, Snoop Dogg. And there, and she looks at me and she says, Snoop Dogg, that came from TikTok. It's almost like for a split second, I'm irritated.
Exactly.
I'm like, first of all, you sound so stupid.
You do. You're so naive. You have no idea what you're talking about. And then, which makes me feel old. It's like,
I'm so frustrated, you guys. I'm about to.
Oh, no. Oh, we can hear you.
You can? Mm-hmm.
Okay, oh, you're clear.
Well, I'm just going to have to do it on my phone, which is annoying.
It's good to
hear
you.
Yeah.
Wow. I look, just got a jump scare looking at me.
What do you mean?
Oh, I just scared myself. I look scary a little bit.
You look great.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Hey, let me ask you this, because this is a fascinating conversation for me, and I've had it with some coworkers.
All ladies.
Like, what is the comfort level when it comes to pals? Like, hopefully you consider Hane and I. Like, if you were to come on here and we're just like, man, you are like not saying you look pretty right now, but what if one of us said you are a really, really pretty woman? Like, where does it become uncomfortable?
I think it's tone and vocabulary, but keep going, Ellen. I don't hear what you want to hear your thought.
I agree. Mm-hmm. You had me until you said you are a very pretty woman.
Vocabulary.
Right.
Exactly.
It'd be totally different if I said, oh, you look really nice today.
You look
totally
today.
Different story.
Yeah. That's great. That's friend neutral. That's
right.
Not.
But you could change your tone and be like, you look really great today.
Yeah.
You know, that's a little creepy.
Imagine the, you know, us three and like three other of the co-hosts, and let's say, you know, so it's a lot of us, and then Ellen, you say what you just said, oh my gosh, I just scared myself, and then Stoy is actually like, no, Ellen, you're a really pretty woman.
Stoy would say like, that. Stoy would say, Ellen, you look so beautiful today.
Yeah, and it's being Stoy. It's not strange or awkward or creepy. Yeah.
Well, thank you. I mean, thanks. I think this
Cheers.
Week marks 1 year since my last bevy.
Oh, dang. Good for you. Congratulations.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I have a skinnier neck now, I think.
Well, early on, you had cannabis as like a backup substitute, which was a gift and a blessing, but it was not good in your cravings for candy and all that kind of stuff. Like, how's that tension going? Because early on, you didn't give a shit.
Yeah. Well, that's funny you say that, because early on I was like, you know, I'm going to give myself a month. I'm going to eat as many chips as I want. I'm going to go, you know, just buck wild with the treats. Well, it's been a year and I'm going buck wild almost every night.
Yeah.
How do you feel? Do you feel good?
I don't know. I'm just getting older. I have aches and pains that I thought would go away without alcohol, but generally, yes. I mean, just I feel like I'm living. And also, something I've noticed is that life used to seem like it was going by very quickly. And now it doesn't feel that way. And I think it's because I am present for all of it.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, yeah.
Not that I was blackout drunk ever, but you know what I mean? Just even a little buzz. It's like you're somewhere else.
Yeah, yep. Totally. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It makes holidays very long and boring, though. When you're at your in-laws' house.
Yeah, I was about to say, guys, depends on the company.
Well, that's awesome. That's really awesome. Yeah. Do you have any fears? I've got two questions for you. Do you have any general fears about going back to alcohol? And B, depending on how you answer A, do you refrain from having a sip of anything because you don't want to risk jumping back into alcohol?
Yeah, it's I can't do it. I have actually recurring nightmares now that I am like in the middle of a beer and I don't remember deciding to do that. So I feel like it's like without my consent, I lost all of what I've worked for.
Oh, wow.
And it happens several times, but it makes waking up such a relief because I'm so proud of myself. And yep. I didn't, and you know what? If I did choose to have a drink, I shouldn't say lose everything I worked for because I've done so much, but one drink wouldn't ruin anything, but it would be harder. Why would I want to make it harder for me to get back? Because exactly. I want to be in the place that I'm at, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Alan, I've got some catching up to do with you on some specific things, but I just want to, I'm telling you guys, we're probably just taking a sharp turn here. We were intending on talking Christmas stuff. Maybe I can get you guys back on a midday like this to do like a Christmas episode, but I kind of think we're going to be knee to waist deep and post-traumatic stress and seeing crazy stuff. But Ellen, I don't know if you knew about my seizure back in 2011. So, and Hayne, it's funny because we were all texting and you kind of were just like, is it too soon? And oh my gosh, I have joked with Priscilla so much about that seizure back in the day, because it's just now looking back on it, it's comical. But when it was happening, she thought that I had died. Like she thought that, oh my gosh, my husband's dead and we're at a big festival and my kids are watching this. Right. And she's like, is anybody a doctor? You know, sort of thing.
Right.
But I was, the fact that I was playing on a gigantic painted on the ground layout of Twister. And when the person would say right hand yellow, Priscilla was watching me and there was like a yellow real easy, like inches away, but I was like looking for one and she's like, why didn't he just put his hand right there? So anyway, to me, it gets funnier. I stand straight up in the air, and Priscilla said my mouth was totally open, and I looked terrified, and then I just fell. Like, I fell like a tree. And, you know, so she just thought, that's really awesome. Today, I just lost my husband while he was...
Had a brain aneurysm, you know? Went down.
Right.
Good thing you weren't playing charades. That would have really been weird.
Dead! Dead! Dead!
Fish out of water, fish out of water.
So here's the thing, and you may be both very educated on seizures. I'm not, Hayne. I would assume you probably know more about them than I do, but I do know that some people do not get warnings. I think they call it the aura.
Correct.
Aura.
Yeah, it hits them.
Right. So that day I had William on my shoulders, and you know, he was probably 2 years old, and I was like, man, I'm just not feeling something's weird is going on. And so I took him off my shoulders, and I'm trying to get the kids involved in different games. And I remember trying to get them to throw a football through a hula hoop sort of game or whatever. And when I was doing it, it's like I had to concentrate so hard. And this latest time, which I'll share here in a second, the best way that I could liken it to is if you're watching a video and the audio is off.
Yeah.
It's like it's lagging. And I feel like when I am heading towards a seizure, now that it's happened two times, it feels like when I try to do something, like I can move my hand, but it lags. And I don't think that it is. It's right. Just how my brain is
perceiving it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. So, Ellen, here's what I want to do is, first of all, I want you to watch that first video, but let me give you some context and our listeners' context. And then on air, I want to ask you if you want to actually see the seizure. So I reached out to Hayne and Robbie, or one of them reached out, and I told them about the seizure. And I didn't even ask, hey, Robbie and Hayne, do y'all want to actually see the thing? Because it was all captured on the security camera. I texted Hayne specifically because even if Robbie was like, yeah, I don't think it would be good for him to see. Whereas Hayne, I'm just like, Hayne's seen so much stuff. He probably
Just compound that trauma. Right.
But
take my STD.
STD.
PTSD. Oh, STD. Let's take my PTSD a little bit deeper and deeper and deeper. Yeah, and maybe I'll get an STD in the process. Who knows?
That does sound like I don't care about Hane. Hey, I'm going to protect Robbie, but I'm just going to send it to Hane. So, Ellen, what you're about to watch, here's what happened is, and the aura was way speedier this time. Like, it all happened a lot quicker. So, I'm playing basketball with William and we're at some friend's house in Boone and that whole stuff started happening and it, like I said, sped up quickly. And I said, William, I got to go talk to your mom about something. We're in the middle of horror. So for him, he was just like, what? Oh, okay. And so I walk up the stairs and Ellen, you can go ahead and start watching that.
Okay, I'm scared.
Basically when I go up there, I have no idea where I am anymore. I've lost sense. I'm looking around. I'm kind of scared.
Okay,
and I don't know where I am anymore.
One
That's
question.
What's so bizarre.
Am I going to see your body hit the ground? I just want to prepare myself for that.
No, I haven't sent you the video of the actual seizure because I'm not assuming that you would want to see it.
No, I want to see. Dude, I've been watching Gaza footage.
Okay.
Well, I've seen a baby getting his face blown off. I can handle your little...
Yeah,
it looks like a really awesome orgasm, just to be honest.
Hane, did I hurt your feelings when I told you that I was embarrassed to even send it to you?
No, like, you didn't hurt my feelings. Like, no, I could totally feel how you felt. Like,
yeah.
I go to these things all the time and I'm a stranger and people look at me and they cry and like, I'm so embarrassed. I'm like, no, you don't need to be.
Right now, Ellen is watching a video of Joey forgetting where he was.
That's what's so bizarre, Hane, is how crazy the brain is.
It's
that
wild.
1 second, mm-hmm. I know that I'm in Boone, North Carolina, playing basketball with my son at our friend's house, walking up the stairs. The next second, I'm like, I don't know where I am. And William says something to me in the video. I know that's my son.
Yep.
And I answer him. I give him a quick note and I answer him. But I still don't know where I am.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just crazy.
It's called being posticular. That's what happens after a seizure, like extreme confusion.
Yeah.
And then often when people start coming out of it and you say to them, this happened to me, this happened yesterday. I was on a call yesterday. It was a lady, she was in her bathroom. She just got out of the shower, her bathroom floor. She had a seizure. And she was wrapped up in a towel. Well, she's just laying on the floor. And when we get there, a sister called and we walk in and I'm like, did you have a seizure? She goes, I didn't have a seizure. And she goes, I'm just taking a nap. And I said, in the bathroom floor, soaking wet. And she goes, she kind of looked at herself and she's like, oh, how did I get here? Like, it seemed like her brain created a narrative to almost protect itself to say, yeah, we're just taking a nap, you know?
Yeah.
But then when she saw herself soaking wet, laying on the bathroom floor, wrapped in a towel, she was so confused. And that's just normal.
Yeah. All right, Ellen, you still with us? We don't have your video.
I think she's watching the video.
Oh, at this point. Well, I haven't sent her the
link yet.
Actual seizure.
Oh, gotcha.
Here's what's weird, and I don't know why, and I bet you some people would be able to relate to this, but I can't put a finger on why, is I don't think it was good for me to watch that video, but I couldn't stop watching
it. No, I know. Yeah.
And I think it's because it's so freaking interesting to actually see what happened when I was not aware of anything. I mean, it's so enticingly interesting. And I don't know what it is, but Priscilla was like, I think Priscilla took them off my phone. And then all I had to do was pull up my text thread where
you sent it to me. You can keep watching it over and over again.
But I haven't. You know, where I was probably watching it a few times in a day, I haven't looked at it probably but once in the last 3 days. And I actually think it's probably pretty good for me.
No, I think it's healthy.
Watch it so many
absolutely
times.
Yeah, I think that's healthy. I do.
Yeah.
But I mean, but as your, you know, as your good friend, it was, even though I see these all the time, it was hard for me to watch.
Yeah.
Particularly when you were calling out, you know,
right.
You were making audible noises.
Right.
And I don't know. It just made my heart cry a little bit. I just hated to see you in that space. But
For sure.
Yeah.
All right. So Ellen, what you watched, the video that I'm going to send you now is 15 seconds later, which is really interesting. I really want to know what those 15 seconds entailed. I'm not going to leak the audio. It would just be honestly weird for me.
Sure. Yeah, definitely. And I think it'd be disturbing for some people.
Yeah. Let us know when you
click play though. Can you hear us? Okay. Gotcha. All right. All right. It's sent. It says delivered. She's excited. I'll warn you, Crazy Hane didn't like it. And you're a real friend, honestly, for me to send this to you.
Ellen is currently watching a video of Joey having a seizure. Yikes.
But no, feeling embarrassed, Joey, that's completely normal, man.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I mean, you just think, oh, that, well, and there is something that needs to be adjusted and something's going on that needs to be figured out. But I think that it's just completely normal to be completely out of control and feel like because of that, it's affecting other people that I love.
Yeah.
And I get it. It's so common for folks to say, oh, that I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Or I'm so embarrassed. It's like, no, you don't need to be like, yeah. I'm not embarrassed for you.
I'm just for compassion. It wasn't really the aftermath because I was still unaware, but that second video that I sent you, mm-hmm. where it seemed like I was trying to get up and put my arms up and that sort of thing, is that normal?
Totally.
I don't remember that at all.
Totally normal.
And what's freaky is my friend Ryan says something, and it looks like my eyes acknowledge another voice, but it looks zombie glazed. I mean, it looks kind of creepy, man.
It does.
Because I don't remember it, but my eyes respond to them. Is that all normal?
Completely normal. So we call it you're in a posticular state. So you've come out of the seizure, and it's almost like think of it this way. Think of it as rebooting a computer. So all of a sudden the computer freaked out, then your brain rebooted, and then there's that. Well, and then the computer is putting things back together before the home screen comes back up.
Gotcha.
And that posticular state is kind of it's rebooting itself before everything comes back up again.
Yeah. Did you see it, Ellen?
Yeah.
It's rough, isn't it?
Was it disturbing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, the sound really is the worst part.
It's rough.
The sounds that you make.
Mm-hmm.
Did you start crying afterwards when you came out of it, or?
No, because I'm like the next thing that I remember is my wife and then my buddy's wife, who is my buddy also, and they're both sitting, you know, basically at my feet, you know, so to speak. So both of their heads are kind of like on both sides of my knees, and I'm like, why are y'all sitting down, looking at me? Like
that's wild. I've never witnessed a seizure before. I mean, in my mind, I know that people just like tense up and shake, but
right. Well, what hurt my heart, and I got some good wisdom from, you know, Hane and Robbie, because we just happened to be texting, is William, you know, you can see him walking up the stairs. So he heard it all. And then he saw a decent amount. And then I found out later that Gwenny heard me moving around, and so she watched it from inside and then had a panic attack. And I'm just
she did.
She had a panic attack. No. Yeah.
Well, yeah, as one would. Yeah. She thought her dad was dying.
Yeah.
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 Hold on a second. Edit this out. Yeah, Louie, what's up?
Yeah, that's interesting. I think because when we were talking about you and I and Robbie, we're talking about, you know, the kids and you hated for them to see that. And and I don't think you guys did. I think Priscilla did everything awesome. I am more apt to, when that kind of stuff happens, to let my kids watch it, like to be exposed to it.
Cool. I'm in a meeting.
And
can't talk right now.
But, you know, everything's nuanced. You know, Gwenny obviously has anxiety stuff, and you want to protect her from that. So I totally get it.
You know,
at the same time, but
I haven't seen you guys in a while. And since we're talking about this, we had a really scary thing happened a few weeks ago. Louie and Phoebe and I were leaving for school, and we just have a little rambler, but we have like 5 cement steps walking down from our front door, and then a cement paveway. I'm just throwing words
sidewalk
together.
Sidewalk. I've seen sidewalk. It. I've walked those stairs. I've walked that sidewalk.
It's hard. It's made of, you know, rock. So I was holding Louie up at my hip, and Phoebe was behind me. And let me preface this story with saying Phoebe has a lot of anxiety as a 7-year-old and deals with her own stuff. And my ankle rolls on the first step, and Louie just goes flying out of my arm.
Whoa.
And this is, I'm standing five stairs up and he's up on my hip. And so I go flying the other way. I hit the pavement, but I hear his body hit the pavement. Ugh. And I don't know if you've ever thrown a toddler through the air, just at the pavement.
Not for a couple of years, sound, a couple of years ago.
The sound that his body made.
Oh, yeah.
Was horrific.
It's the worst. Yeah.
And so when I'm on the pavement and I look over and you guys, he was laying there. His eyes were wide open. He wasn't moving. There was blood in his hair and on the pavement.
And he wasn't moving?
He wasn't moving. His eyes were open. Mm. I almost threw up. I've heard people talk about, like, they see something traumatic and they get sick. I got physically ill. It was the worst moment of my life.
Mm. You thought he was dead, right?
I thought he was dead.
Oh,
the story gets worse. So Phoebe just watched her brother, like, get pummeled, right? And so I'm like, go get the phone, go get the phone. So she's going to find my phone. Poor kid. Mm. She brings me out my phone and it was dead. My phone was fucking dead.
Oh, gosh.
I was living my nightmare. Gosh. And so I had to, I mean, my ankle is torn up. Only adrenaline is getting me through this. So I scoop up Louie and I know, like, I don't want to move this body. What if his neck is broken? I don't know what's going on. And so I scoop him up and I hobble him inside on my one ankle. I had to plug my damn phone in and wait for it to boot up before I could call 911, which was
eternity.
Agonizing. Yeah. Absolutely agonizing.
Yeah.
Long story short, he ended up having to get a CT scan because he started throwing up, and we don't know if he seized a little bit. I'm not sure.
How long did it take you to recognize that he is not dead? Like, how long were you in that mind?
Oh, well, you know, it felt like forever.
Was he crying at all? Did he start crying?
No.
That's what's scary. No. If they're crying, that's a good sign.
He wasn't making a sound. Oh. There was blood. His eyes were open. It was the worst moment of my life.
Yeah.
And then to make matters worse, while we're sitting in the ER waiting for the CT scan to be ready, I'm holding him, you know, he's all bloody. I've got my ankle up. They got me in a wheelchair and I look up and what's on the TV, but a memorial to Matthew Perry. And I lost it. I just wept.
Yeah.
I just wept. Insult to injury.
So what hours has social services given you visitation now?
Hey, you know, I've never experienced thinking that my child is dead, but I had this experience. So we were at the beach and Gwynnie was she was probably 3 years old. She was sitting on my lap eating some chips or something. Then Rosa's like, "Dad, come here, help me with something." So I get up, Gwynnie takes my seat. I go help, you know, with Rosa. And about a minute later, my friend Michael, he says, "Joey." And I look up and he mouths the words, "Where's Gwynnie?"
No.
And so.
No, thank you.
And I was like, oh, shoot. I don't see her. And I have to tell Priscilla. Like, I have to tell her right now. Yeah. I cannot keep this from her. Mm-hmm. I said, "Priscilla, I don't know where Gwynnie is." So there was 45 seconds where we didn't know whether to run left, run right, or run into the water.
Right.
We didn't know if somebody took her or if she drowned, but she was not in sight. And the little critter had climbed up on a sand dune, just going to town with a little shovel. God, and a bucket.
These stories make me feel sick.
Yeah.
They make me feel
happy holidays, everybody.
Yeah, really.
So this is kind of funny because we took a call two shifts ago on this road we never run calls on. But when we got there, it reminded us of a call that we took there maybe 5 years prior. It came in as a missing child. So when we show up, a bunch of units show up, we meet with a mother, like, what happened? She said, "I had my baby in a stroller and I was taking groceries into the house. And when I took the groceries to the house, I came back out and the baby was gone, like completely gone, stroller and all." Nothing made sense. This really obscure little cul-de-sac the middle of nowhere. So we started, and I tell my guys, "Hey, just start looking around the area." Well, the cul-de-sac's on a hill. It's Asheville's hilly. She forgot to put the brake on the stroller. So the baby took off when she went inside, down the hill, hit the curb, the stroller and the baby in the car seat flipped down the hillside. When we found it, kid was completely, the kid was unfazed, not crying, not upset, just hanging. And it's just hanging like this with the stroller leaning against a tree. And we, but she was beside herself, like thought for sure.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
She, oh, baby yeah. has been kidnapped.
Oh my gosh.
You guys, well, can we talk about something else?
Well, I don't know if it's going to get any better, Ellen. I don't know, but
as it doesn't involve children.
Yeah. I want to tap into Ellen's brain as to, because I know a lot of people like true crime stuff. I am enticed by it. I know you are, and I don't know why.
It's a whole lifestyle.
Yeah. I don't know why we as humans are like this, but what made me think of this, and it's neat. I was like, oh, me and Hane are good friends. Cause I thought about Hane. I was watching, I don't know what captured my eye, but I saw a YouTube video and it said something along the lines of a judge tells criminal, this is the worst thing she has possibly ever seen in her whole entire life. And so I was just like, I gotta hear this. And literally she says, I will be disturbed for the rest of my life. What you did to your daughter and wife, I will never unsee. Mm. It is the worst thing I have ever seen in my whole entire life. Mm. And she, so,
my and mouth's she, watering.
Yeah. Because you love this so much, this talk.
Because now we have to know. We have to know what it is.
Right. Well, she never says. She never says. And so I'm thinking, I mean, did he slice them into pieces? I mean, and so I just thought that woman and many people like her, different positions, different jobs, see stuff that normal people like me will never have to see.
Well, and it made, unless you get jury duty sometimes.
Yes, yes. But it made me think of Hane. And Hane, you told the story before, and I mean, this is just the tip of the iceberg, mm-hmm. but there was a woman who was pregnant and decapitated. Mm-hmm. You guys tried to save the baby. You couldn't.
Right.
You said most of those guys, if not all of them, who were on the job with you that day are no longer firefighters.
Yeah.
And part of that was because of that trauma. And I guess mm-hmm. my question for you is, have you ever thought about getting out because of the sorts of things that you have to see?
No, I haven't.
Would you call that a sacrifice? Like, I know you're not going to brag on yourself, but you know, we talk about firefighters being heroes and all that stuff. And, you know, typically our go-to is, you know, they run into the buildings where people are running out. But now I'm realizing you also see stuff that we don't have to see.
Right.
That's a sacrifice.
Sure. No, it is. I mean, sharing a little bit of just kind of my psychological struggles with some of what I go through. Like, I can't, if we get toned out to a hanging because of a very traumatic hanging I went to early in my career, even right now, just the thought of it. But if I were to get toned out for a hanging, I'll start to sweat. I cannot watch a movie. So we watched, it's that new time. The book was A Man Called Ove, or A Man Named Ove. Tom Hanks did the movie, A Man Named Otto. They changed the name to Otto from Ove.
Yeah.
But there's that, it's a really great film, but there's that scene early in the film where he tries to hang himself. I can't watch it. I can't.
And he keeps preparing over and over.
Yeah. I have to walk out of the room. Because I was on
a break. He tried to do the same thing on that island that he was deserted in a long time ago. All right, go ahead.
Yeah, something about Hanks and hangings. But, and the reason why is because in 2009, 2010, we went to a hanging. It was a 16-year-old kid hung himself from a tree, and we got there. He's still alive. And I'm,
oh my God.
And I'm 6 foot four. I'm the tallest guy on the rig. So I put him piggyback on my shoulders, and I stood up with him to try to take all the pressure off the noose.
Oh my God.
While my officer is literally trying to climb the tree with a knife to cut the kid down. And you can hear all the noises and everything. And then we get the kid down. But then you're in the middle of the call and it's just so intense. And then we get
done. Did he survive?
No, he died. He had done so much irreparable damage to his airway.
Yeah.
But then we get done and we go back. We have to go back to the scene. We get his body loaded and we have to go back to where it happened. It's in the middle of the woods. we have to go back to it to get all of our gear. And we go back to get our gear and we're picking it up and we can see the news still there and everything. And we all just lose it, you know, because it was such a horrible thing to experience to see. But it's like, what's going on in a 16-year-old kid's life that they feel like they need to hurt themselves, you know, like that? We've talked about suicide before on the show, but anyhow, that's not what this is about.
It's more traumatic too when the younger the person.
Totally, but super traumatic to the point that I can't.
You know, I've started talking to my therapist about this idea that our body remembers trauma in a physical way, and I'm trying to understand if, you know, some of my physical ailments are due to trauma that is not physical that I've been through. Mm. And I would imagine that your body holds a lot of that. It's almost like muscle memory, but mm-hmm. trauma memory for your body.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a book that's on my to read list, but I haven't read yet. And it's called The Body Keeps the Score.
Mm-hmm. And pretty controversial. I hear.
Is it really?
I have it too. And then now I've gone down a rabbit hole about why people swear by not reading it. So I don't know. I'm torn.
Do you know the controversy?
No.
That's super interesting.
I think the controversy is just that it's bullshit, but I'm not sure.
If I don't know. You know, I've been doing this job for 15 years, and if my body is holding some stuff, I haven't experienced it yet. Physically, but I do a lot of stuff to try to take care of myself. I mean, the way that I eat, I'm a sauna guy. I'm a cold plunge guy.
It's that sauna. That's doing it.
Yeah. A big exercise. I mean, do a lot of exercise, run. So there's a lot of things that I do. And I just have a really great support system at home, support system with the other firefighters. I mean, it used to be the fire service and most of the first responders that generally have the hardest time with PTSD are not fire, it's police. And the reason why is because most of them are alone. So sometimes police are partnered up, but often these guys and these ladies, they're alone and they experience something super traumatic and they have to get back in their car alone and they have no one to process it with. One third, so 33% of police officers that are shot are shot by their own hand, 33%. That is excruciatingly high. And there's so much trauma that they carry because at least for fire, we get back on a rig with three other guys or, you know, girls. There's four of us together and we start talking about it. We process it. One of the ways we do it, and something that I shared on our most recent thing about our dick gate conversation, Joey, is that we use humor to break ice. We use humor to start. And yeah, for a lot of folks, they'd be like, wow, that's really, really dark. But it's a way for us to start talking about it, to break the ice, and then we start to dive into it. So it's not that firefighters or EMS are immune to having post-traumatic stress disorders. They definitely have them. But we have a support system naturally built into how we work that I think helps alleviate some of that. So we talk a lot. And I've seen in the last 10 years, at least with our department and in the state of North Carolina, a real growth in what we call critical incident stress management, CISM. So that when these traumatic things happen, it's very normal for me to get a phone call because we'll have a super traumatic call in the rig. And then I'll get a phone call from a mental health specialist says, hey, do you guys want someone to come and visit the station and hang out? And I love that. I love that we have people that are always checking on us when something bad goes on. And for some people, for a lot of guys, it's no, I'm fine. But then maybe one guy's like, yeah, that kind of hurt me or that kind of messed with me a little bit. You just never know what's going to trigger people based on their past. So like for me, we go to a hanging, my guy's probably going to be fine. If it's just a random thing, I'm going to have to talk to somebody if I go to a hanging.
Well, your guys might be fine, but it might be their first time seeing.
Correct.
Them.
Correct.
You know,
and we're,
what I like to do with my traumas is right away when it happens in the next day or two, I try to actually, like when I was saying that the image of Louie's body laying mm-hmm. there with the blood, and
yeah.
I actually tried to think of that mm-hmm. quite a bit in the first week mm-hmm. so that I could numb that shock a little bit.
It's similar to you watching the seizure video over and over and over, Joey.
Yeah, I'll just watch that. Oh, I'm going to binge that tonight. I'm just going to get stoned and just watch my friend Joey convulse and make the most primal scary sounds.
I told him, I said, you know, you can look at this and it's super scary, or you can look at it and think that man just had the orgasm of a lifetime. Full body convulsions, screaming and moaning. That was amazing.
Oh,
and
you have video for one like that.
Yeah. And you have video of Priscilla straddling you, holding you.
Yeah, and then he just wanted to be held by his wife and cry.
Oh, yeah, she's straddling him. It's so sensual, you know? You just got to spin it that way in your head.
Yeah.
Ellen, so being a real crime junkie, is that what it's called? Real crime?
True crime.
True crime, yeah. Being a true crime junkie, do you have to turn off or fast forward or skip the story if it's involving a child?
Ooh, good question.
Every once in a while, yes. I remember the first, even before I had kids, there was a couple stories I heard that it was too disturbed to get disturbing to get the visual of the abuse that a baby was taking. This feels like I'm not even interested in the psyche of the person doing this anymore, because I'm just thinking about a baby getting bludgeoned, you know?
Yeah.
And so obviously now that I have kids, it's heightened. So yeah, I'll skip stories that have like especially physical abuse of little kids.
So let me ask you this, because you represent, I would assume, tons definitely tons of people, and I would be one of them, but I would be interested in the like in a Gallup poll as far as who really enjoys true crime stuff and, you know, who thinks that it's silly to ingest all of that stuff. But in your best words, why do you like it so much?
Yeah, good question.
I mean, you're literally hearing stories and seeing things of the most evil acts done on in the most evil way. Why do you want to see that?
I think it's just fascinating. I think it's fascinating.
Fascinating.
I think the idea that, for me at least, it's not I want to know the details of the murder, because I love the murder part and I love the gore part. It's, I mean, I think everybody also has favorite types of scenarios. So, for example,
where's she going with this, Ayn?
I'm so drawn in. I can't wait. What's about to come out of her mouth?
It's not that bad.
Edge of my seat.
My favorite type is when someone's like been living a double life and they're married and they are, you know, they're externally somebody different, but internally they are just, you know, whether it be insane or evil or whatever. And then they, you know, snap, or there's some love triangle or whatever. Like, I like that, like the typical suburban,
This is fascinating. Is there something
about, I really like that.
Yeah. So that's interesting. So is there something about that type of scenario that you can relate to? Even feels like a fantasy.
That's why I like it, because I can't, like, Munchausen's is one of my favorite things. I know that there's no good way to phrase that. I don't like Munchausen's, but if there's a Munchausen story, I'm salivating.
What is Munchausen? I don't know what that is.
Oh, sorry.
Yes, okay.
Munchausen's is if I was to fake an illness and try and get attention from doctors and people and raise money for my illness that I'm faking. Munchausen by proxy is when usually the mother does it to her child.
Fascinating. Okay.
Yeah. So they will, there's all these common things, like somehow these kids always end up with like feeding tubes and all these things, and they do it to get attention, and they'll doctor hop, and they'll have, sometimes these kids will have surgeries and all these things that they don't need. It's a type of abuse. It's listed as a type of abuse now, which obviously it is, but it's kind of confusing because it's like, is this person unwell? Is it a mental illness, or is this person so calculating and evil, you know? And it's a mixture of both, but that is like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. It's almost like, as I'm thinking about this, it's almost like the real sincere deep WTF moments where we're like, oh my gosh, about anything is enticing in some way, unless it's painful to you personally. But I'll even like it, and it will make it sound like I'm trashing people that do this. I'm actually affirming that I understand where this comes from. But when we find out someone in our community or someone in Hollywood dies, so many of us, we just want to say on Facebook, like, I'm grieving this. I'm so sad for this family, blah, blah, blah. It's not, you're not really adding much to the world right away. Like, it's almost like we want to tell people right away that this death happened because it's a WTF moment.
But I have no interest in that at all. Like, zero. Like, it doesn't, but my question for you guys is,
What do you mean by that? Like, you don't feel any inclination to tell anybody?
I don't give a shit.
You don't give a shit if someone dies?
No, I mean, no. But I don't give a shit.
Talking about, like, true crime.
So well, both. So I have no interest in true crime stuff at all. But also, what I meant by I don't give a shit is I don't feel like I want to go and let the world know and you know, yeah, I cared that Matthew Perry died, or I cared. I mean, yeah, that's really sad. But I don't. But for me, I read the headline and I'm like, okay, and I just move on.
Yeah,
I have an interest in sitting in it.
Matthew Perry. For, side note, I did not see this coming. When I found out, I was absolutely gutted. I had no idea that I would be feeling that way about a person I've never met. I just on and off cried for days, and I think it was because I brought this to my therapist. I was like, this is so bizarre because I feel like I'm in grief and it's confusing.
Hmm.
And we sorted out that it's because it was a huge part of my adult, like young adulthood.
Totally.
And it's linked to that. And he is Chandler Bing to me. And on top of that, he had the hardest, roughest time getting and staying sober.
Right.
He should never have been alive to begin with. I mean, 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
And he died in a tragic way that was kind of ironic and sad, but he helped me get sober, you know? So sure, there's a lot of, like, I'm absolutely sad because we lost Matthew Perry, who's one of the greatest people. And I don't think anybody had anything bad to say about him, which was really encouraging.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, how you articulated that is the same reason why it's a different form of grief, but why Bill Cosby affected you so much and affected me so much. See, I didn't watch Friends, and so I was like, oh wow, that's really sad. I'm, you know, sad for his friends, you know, all the whole cast, but their family and, you know, his family and friends and all that. But it wasn't a personal thing. Whereas Bill Cosby stuff, that wrecked me. Cause I'm like, ooh, that was a part of my like childhood, my middle school, my high school.
Yeah. I mean, I totally get it.
I took a long time talking through all the Cosby stuff,
mm-hmm,
but see, I totally get where y'all are coming from. I understand it cognitively, but I don't connect at all in that way.
You deal with death all the time.
True.
So for me to read about death or listen to podcasts about death, it's not, I'm far removed. And also I feel like the families of the people who deal or lived through these stories that are on Dateline or whatever, I guarantee you, they're not into true crime.
Well, and I want to circle back to the true crime and what it connects, but I do want to say this, cause I think you just opened up a door, something I was thinking about earlier. And that is, in some ways, the true crime stuff, particularly if it's something that's very recent. So for example, my heart breaks. Like, for me, I was pissed that Netflix put out a series on Jeffrey Dahmer that was huge. They made a shit ton of money, and there are still people who are grieving the loss of his victims, yeah, that are having to relive that all over again. For me, I'm like, Netflix, you should be ashamed of yourself for making probably billions of dollars off of someone's, multiple people's loss and grief. And they're having, it's one thing if it's Jack the Ripper. There's so many generations separated from that.
Sure. I see what you're saying. Yeah.
But it's so close to home. And I totally get the whole interest in the true crime in that, because one of the questions I wanted to ask when hopping back is, is part of the true crime interest. Is there an adrenaline rush that you feel when you hear these stories? Is it some type of?
Yeah, I was thinking
of,
that too. Yeah. I bet.
Yeah.
So like exactly, totally. And I was curious because I figured you would say yes. So for me, I don't get any adrenaline rush from that, but I could easily say, well, I don't understand why people in this true crime thing. But if it's the adrenaline thing, people would look at my life and see that my hobbies and what I do for a living, I do it because I love the adrenaline rush. I don't get it out of true crime, but I love getting on that red truck and screaming. And that's when I sent you guys that photograph.
You're kind of living the true crime though.
In a way, but even my hobbies. Yeah, I'm a big rock climber. Like
you do. You love birds.
I love birds. I love getting as close to birds as high as I can possibly get on the rock. But a lot of folks think, well, man, that's nuts. Well, I like to do it because I like the adrenaline. So I think we all, whether it's listening to a true crime podcast or whatever it may be, you know, going hunt. I know guys that are addicted to deer hunting because they love that adrenaline dump when a big buck, you know, shows itself. So,
Hain, do you think that a level of numbness is actually helpful in your job? Because a lot of us would be like, gosh, that would suck just to be so numb to kids hanging themselves sort of thing.
A level, yes. Full, no.
But, right.
That feels sociopathic to me.
Okay.
But a level of numbness, yes.
Do you think, obviously there are some, do you think it's common for in people in your line of work just to be completely numb? Like it's just, they might as well be cleaning floors.
Most of the guys I know that are completely numb, you're talking about like cleaning floors, are guys that have come back from war. So when they see really hard things in our job, they came from a past of seeing incredibly horrific things in the Middle East. Like super horrific. I tell guys though, like
be in that line of work because of that trauma.
They're looking for that. Yeah, they're looking for that adrenaline dump, particularly. I mean, that's kind of the whole premise of the Hurt Locker, that movie that went viral. The guy just kept going back to war because he needed that connection. But I tell guys, post-traumatic stress is completely normal. PTS, normal. If you're not having PTS, you're not human. You know, there's something off. We just never want to add a D. Disorder to the PTS. We don't want to be PTSD.
Yeah.
And that comes through for most of us, 90% of us is just talking about it. It's just talking about it, sharing our experiences of how we experienced that, listening to one another. But some folks get stuck in a loop and that PTS has the D added to it. And that's when they're in the loop. They're in the loop. They're in the loop. And that's retired a lot of guys and gals. I mean, I know both genders, but some of the toughest firefighters I know are female and they can handle so much more than even a lot of guys can. So
I just wonder if people like you doing who have to see those things, and then people like me who I've seen someone get killed before on the street, but I didn't know what I was walking into,
right.
And I wasn't prepared. I wonder what the difference is, or how our brains process that kind of stuff. You know?
Yeah. I do think that exposure to it, for me, 15 years of it, the first I can reflect and think about those first really traumatic calls I went to really affected me, or even just going to them, being dispatched for it and driving there and almost being super jittery. I wasn't in a panic, but like, oh my God, what's this going to look like?
Have you guys been, oh, sorry.
No. So now when I have similar calls, I'm not in those exact spaces anymore. But I don't want to go to them, but someone's got to go. And
have you guys been watching and seeing the images coming out of Gaza? Okay. Is there a reason why you don't look at it?
For me, yes. So I don't, this is a really interesting conversation. I'm not interested. And there probably is some link as well. I'm not interested in true crime. I'm not interested in watching the Gaza stuff. I'm not interested and even watching a lot of serious films that have any type of violence in it, because I'm just so exposed to it all the time in my job.
Wow.
So I don't want to come home and look at it. I want my home to be a sanctuary.
I feel like specifically what's happened in Gaza because half the victims are children.
Right.
And it's really, really horrific to watch. but those people don't have an option.
Right.
They have to see it. They have to be traumatized. And I deal a lot with my privilege.
Sure.
That I get to choose what war content I see and how much of the global conflict I want to know about and see.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been really convicted. I think that's the right word about the Israel-Gaza situation, because they are begging for people to just know what's going on and know how bad it is. They are begging. And I go back and forth about it as well. It's like, well, that kind of messes me up. I don't want to see a baby with no face.
Right.
But on the other hand, out of honor to them, like the least I can do is just pay attention, literally just pay attention and follow the photographers on the ground. And it's absolutely gut wrenching, but it's also the least I can do. And I can, after I'm done watching those videos, then I can go to Costco. You know what I mean? It's I want to take on some of that trauma because it is the least thing I can do. And all I can think about is those children just getting secondary trauma, you know?
Yeah.
I think I'm choosing to, because it feels like the right thing to do, to not ignore it.
Yeah.
But I think you
I'm
can
really
still
glad that I have
because
now I have educated myself about a lot of stuff I did not know before. Mm-hmm. I was groomed to think one way about Israel, turns out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Boom.
But also, this is such a significant historic event. And I have spent my whole life finding out after the fact about different global conflicts, or not being interested or not understanding what was going on. And I think this is the first time that I'm watching in real time, and this word is debatable, but a genocide happen. And I think it is like I'm experiencing history in a way that people like you aren't, because you're choosing it's just another news. You'll scroll by, but I'm choosing to like experience it in a kind of traumatic way that's maybe not healthy, but at least
team humanity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think
I get
that's
it.
What it
I
is.
Get it.
It's the kids. If it was all adults, I think I might feel differently,
but a life's
I
a life.
Absolutely fired up about these children.
You know, how I really relate to this is I appreciate movies that have portrayed the slave trade, the Holocaust, and these horrific crimes against humanity. I'm thankful for those movies that actually portray it in its horrific way, because it opened my eyes to how horrific it was. Like, if I had never seen Schindler's List, I wouldn't have really any context, like any real visual about what was really happening. But then you watch
until
a movie
Ted
like
Burns
that.
Came, or is it Ted?
Ken.
Burns?
Ken Burns.
Kevin.
Yeah.
Ken Burns. Until Ken Burns came along, changed your life.
Yeah. But I think for each individual, I mean, we all have to know ourselves. We all have to create boundaries that we know are going to keep us in decent spaces. So, like for you, Ellen,
it's tricky.
Your boundary is I can't drink alcohol because you know where that's going to take you.
Right.
But for me, when we're done with this podcast, I want to crack open a beer, you know? And
man, I miss beer.
Yeah, good one there. Good one there, Hank.
You,
you want Ellen to be sad right now?
But
Ellen, super happy that Louis is okay. Do you guys, I have to bounce here. Do y'all have to do any like follow-ups or anything like that as far as like making sure he's okay?
The CT scan was good. So
yeah. Kids are so resilient. So resilient. I mean,
tell you
physically.
What, though, my ankle is torn.
Yeah. Forget about that part.
I had to go get some x-rays on the top of my foot because I felt like there's a little fracture. But apparently I'm just old and my ankles are made of oatmeal. So,
but Joey, even going back to the seizure piece, like William, Gwenny, they're going to be okay. Like kids are resilient. They're so well loved by you and Priscilla. Yeah.
Do you know what the death rattle is? You ever
the
heard
death
of the death rattle?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm a pastor.
So the more the morning or the night before she died, I was wide awake because that's all I could hear in the next room because I lived with my parents when she was dying. And it was pretty disturbing, but I don't remember that sound at all.
Fascinating.
So yeah, if that cool. makes you feel better about your kids, they're not going to remember like the exact sound.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, yeah. All right, everybody, be blessed.
Hey, and this whole seizure thing, dude, it's all going to shake out. It's cool.
It's all going to shake out.
Yeah, and who knows? Maybe you'll have another one, and hopefully we get it on video again.
Yeah. Compilation video, I'm thinking.
All right, Ellen, enjoy your weed tonight and that video over and over again.
Hey, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, everybody.